You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to the final hour this Monday afternoon of Tiki and Tierney. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tiki Barber, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. You can get in touch with us here at Tiki and Tierney on Twitter or 855-212-4227 on the phone, Sirius XM 206. You want to stream us, radio.com or the radio.com app, which also has our podcast of all of our shows and our interviews. Today, Sean Payton previewed the New Orleans Saints, and Justin Pugh, our buddy, offensive lineman for the Arizona Cardinals, did the Arizona Cardinals. Some good stuff in both of those interviews, especially thinking about Kyler Murray, who's on the young end of the quarterbacking spectrum, and Drew Brees, who's on the aged end of the quarterback spectrum. 40 years old, he turned in January. And even if Sean Payton doesn't necessarily say it, you got to believe that there's some urgency for him to win his ever-elusive second championship. So close 2 years ago in the divisional round, the Minnesota Miracle, or Minneapolis Miracle, I should say, bit them. Stephon Diggs over Williams. It was unreal. Obviously, they got blown out in the NFC Championship game by the Philadelphia Eagles, who went on to win the Super Bowl. But that felt like the Saints' chance. And then last year in the NFC Championship game, the Nickell Robey-Coleman pass interference on Tommy Lee Lewis, the non-call, not only the non-call on the PI, but also the non-call on the defenseless receiver, caused a change in the National Football League's policies. PI is now reviewable, and we hit this a bit. 17 times so far in this preseason, pass interference has been reviewed. Only two of them have been overturned. And it was interesting what Coach Payton said, or at least we asked him, about the changing of philosophies now. You now have to think about using that red challenge flag earlier in the game because you never know when it's going to come to an issue later on in the game. Again, you can find those podcast of our interviews on radio.com. Just search Tiki and Tierney. Okay, we heard the Antonio Brown grievance was dismissed by the National Football League. Of course it was, because why would the National Football League, which has been in under fire for its handling of the concussion issue for so many years, all of a sudden say, all right, you can wear an inferior helmet, Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown now reportedly will report to camp. And we'll see if that underlying issue, that second issue that D-Cell, our board op, our esteemed board op, suggested was more about his feet than it was about the helmet. The helmet's a good distraction because it's nonsense. It's utter and stupid nonsense. Even Tom Brady's commenting on it like we care. Wear a helmet, Tom. You know you're not sitting out because you want to win championships. Antonio Brown, do you want to win championships? You sat out 17th game last season, game you had to win because you're a knucklehead. I was going to make a helmet joke, but I won't because that's insensitive to the concussions that happened from playing football. 855-212-4227. But this segment is actually about Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, who we talked about a little bit earlier on in the show at the end of our first hour, reportedly has turned down a $30 million offer per season from the Dallas Cowboys. And there's many reasons why he may have done this. Jane Slater from the NFL Network, she has confirmed this. And there is another rumor out there floating that he wants $40 million. $40 million. This is Dak Prescott now, who has not won a thing. 1-2 in the postseason. Yes, he's been really good in the regular season. Yes, he had a 67.7% completion percentage, and he didn't throw a ton of interceptions. He won a lot of games. He filled in aptly for Tony Romo, now our colleague here on CBS. Hopefully we get him this week, too. It's the NFL meetings in New York. I think we're going to get a chance to talk to Tony on the show later on this week, but we'll keep you apprised of that. But had to take over for Tony Romo, rookie. Nobody expected anything for him. And he balls. He goes 13-3. They make it to the postseason. Dak's viability in the league was evident. But is he a superstar? And by superstar, I mean, are you putting it all on your shoulders and going to win a championship and elevating everybody around you to the tune of $30 million a year? My answer would be not yet. But because they got him in the fourth round and he's making $2 million a year right now, he's been grossly underpaid for the production that he's had last couple of seasons and the success that he's had over the last couple of seasons and the image that he carries as a Dallas Cowboy is unreal. He's not a problem child. He's the perfect citizen for the Dallas Cowboys. He's multiracial. He fits the tome for a Cowboys team that bids itself as America's team. But is he worth $40 million a year? My guess would be no. And I think he probably disagrees with COO Stephen Jones, who had this to say earlier this year.
I'd love for you to max out and give you exactly what you want because y'all have worked hard and you deserve to have a big contract. But if we want to put together the type of team that we want to have with the Cowboys, and if we can talk them into not maxing out, doing well but not maxed, then that allows us to have other good football players around them. And we all know what happens. You look at the TV booths and you look at what these players do off the field. If we can put Super Bowl rings on these guys, then, they'll be legends around this area for many, many, many years to come. And what they may give up a little bit in their contract, they should be able to invest in being a Cowboy and making our teams better.
That's very, very interesting sound right there. Because if you're a Dallas Cowboy, according to COO, I undertitled him, CEO, Stephen Jones, you should give a hometown discount. Because if you get a ring on your finger, you can be like the Deion Sanders and the Troy Aikmans and the Moose Johnsons and all these guys that have parlayed their Dallas Cowboy stardom into unbelievable and sometimes lucrative careers. I mean, hell, I forgot Tony Romo. Tony Romo, even though I just mentioned him, he's probably the biggest star. He has changed the way that analysts look at games. It's not reactive, it's predictive. And Tony Romo's the best in the business at doing it. You just rewatch some of those intense games that he called last year. The Cowboys won. No, the Patriots. Who was that? The Patriots against the Kansas City Chiefs. And some of the decisions that were... I mean, it's like he was the quarterback. It's like he was the coordinator. So he parlayed his Cowboy, star into a superstar next career. But that's not going to work for athletes in 2019 and beyond. Here's why I think Dak Prescott is looking for more than $30 million a year. Currently, the salary cap in the National Football League is roughly $188 million. Now, some teams have a higher salary cap. It's adjusted up because of carryovers, et cetera, things that can elevate it a little bit. For the most part, it's $188 million salary cap. Next year, it's likely to be $198 or close to $200 million in salary cap. And the year after that, it's probably going to be $210 or maybe even more as new revenue comes into the National Football League. This is new stadiums, naming rights, increased revenues. The TV contracts are still 4 years out, but they're in process of being renegotiated all the time. So you never know when that's going to add more revenue. There's new ways, digital partners that are coming into the National Football League because not everybody wants to sit in front of a television or go to a bar to watch a football game. You know what? They want to watch it on their laptop or their iPad or on their phone, to be perfectly honest with you. So the digital partner money, in addition to all the other new revenues that are coming into the league, means the salary cap's going to keep going higher and higher and higher. And so just as a percentage of cap, Dak Prescott is looking at what the top quarterbacks are making. Russell Wilson's 13 or so percent of the cap, but that's just because of his cap number this year. But if you do it on average of his deal, he's about 18 or 19% of the cap. So if I'm Dak Prescott and I'm Dak Prescott's agent, I would do exactly what they're doing. They're projecting what the cap is going to be in 2021 or 2022, about the time the new CBA comes in. There'll be new money. There'll be a new contract, be a new deal. The cap will be $220 million. Dak Prescott is saying, you know what, for 67% completion, 28 touchdowns in total, that's rushing and throwing, it's only 8 interceptions, I'm not mistake prone, Heck, I want to make $40 million because 19% of that $210, $15 million cap is $40 million. I get what Dak is saying. His argument is sound. But is he worth it? Especially because the Dallas Cowboys have a problem right now. It's not really one of their doing, but it just happened this way. They didn't think Dak Prescott was going to, as a fourth-round pick, was going to have to go through 3 years, and after his fourth or after 4 years, and on his fifth year, you're going to have to pay him this much money. Ezekiel Elliott, they have coming due, who's holding out currently. Dak Prescott, who obviously has free agent after this year, and Amari Cooper, who's on the fifth-year option, making $14.5 or so million dollars a year and seemingly content to play out this year. But they're all coming due at the same time. The only way that this offense, which seems potent and has skilled position players that are top of their position, maybe not the top, Zeke is definitely, but top of their positions, top 10 of their positions coming due at the same time, the only way for them to all stay together is if they do what Stephen Jones suggested. They're not going to do it. And so the only thing that you can predict is in the very short term, like Zeke holding out and not playing, letting them be stuck with Alfred Morris and Pollard, is to make these guys or force these guys to take undermarket deals. They're not going to do it. The Dallas Cowboys, before their dynasty of offensive players, the triumvirate, as they like to call it, of offensive players come together, it might fall apart because Dak, not willing to play ball like Stephen Jones, wants him to play ball. I don't think Dak should. Dallas Cowboy fans think he should. I don't think Dak should. 855-212-4227. What do you think? Let me know. Let me know on Twitter, social media, at TK and Tierney, or give me a call, 855-212-4227. But coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk to Dave Marver, who's the CEO of Vices Helmets. Antonio Brown just lost his case to wear his old helmet. But are the new helmets that much better? I think our next guest would argue absolutely. TK and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki Barber, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. We're talking on the phone now to Dave Marver, CEO of Vices Helmets. I know he's got a lot to say about the safety that his new helmet technology is providing, and despite being a Blue Devil, me being a Cavalier, I guess I'll let him on the show. Dave, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Tiki. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure to have you on, especially in light of some of the, I call it controversy, even I don't think it's really a controversy going on in the National Football League with the helmet. So let's back up and talk about, you know, how new helmet technology, yours included, maybe yours specifically, has helped change the narrative about concussions in the National Football League. I'm not going to ask you to disparage your competitors, but why is this so important, and how has it become so important to you and your company?
Well, we started the company because we saw there was a lot of concern about head health at the NFL level, but really every level of football. And we thought we could do something to make a difference. And I think we're part of a renaissance in protective equipment in football, particularly helmets.
Now,
in 27, yeah, go ahead.
Sure. No, I was going to say, but when you look at it from a historic standpoint, we all know the history. Hard helmets were made to prevent skull fractures and concussions. Even though you can improve technology, it still seems like a function of how hard you get hit and the way you get hit, how your head hits. So what advantage is there to improving the technology? You know what I mean? Because I've always thought in some ways, God, if I have a safer helmet, I'm just going to hit harder. And that's actually the detrimental effect, right?
Yeah, well, helmets can make a difference. Helmets today are better than they were a year ago, and certainly 5 years ago, and certainly 10 years ago when Antonio Brown's helmet was last made or what have you. And they're better because they can reduce impact forces more effectively. And if you can reduce the force that's being transmitted to the head, you're likely to reduce the amount of movement of the brain within the skull, and therefore you'll make a difference in some fashion. But having said that, we still don't claim at this point that our helmet, or any helmet for that matter, can reduce or prevent concussion risk. That's always going to be there. And so a better helmet has to be introduced along with rule changes and better tackling techniques and increased vigilance.
Yeah, exactly. Hit with your shoulders as opposed to your head. I mean, when I was growing up, it was see what you hit, but that's no longer the case. We're talking to Dave Marver, CEO of Isis Helmets. Now, you bring up Antonio Brown and his I don't even know what it's weird, like why he's deciding to hang on to a helmet. And maybe it's comfort, maybe it's just familiarity, but it has been made in a decade. When a guy like that doesn't buy in to the new technologies and it's only based on comfort, is he wrong?
Well, I'm not sure it's comfort. Our helmet is new and different. And, you were a professional athlete. It's difficult for some of these guys to change. They become very accustomed to their kit, to their equipment. There are rituals, there are superstitions. So a lot of guys have had trouble, but they've all made the change. And even smallish receivers like a Doug Baldwin or a Golden Tate or a Julian Edelman have had a lot of success in our helmet. So I find this situation a little bit vexing, but I don't want to put myself in his shoes. He's performed at an extremely high level, and he has his own reasons.
Yeah, what is the difference? I mean, the difference between some of these older helmets and your helmet, for instance, it has new technologies, new different paddings, different sensors, etc. What's different from what used to be out there?
Well, generally speaking, helmets have gotten bigger and heavier. And so if you contrast today's top-performing helmets with a helmet like Antonio's wearing, mm-hmm. they are bigger and heavier. And so it is adjustment for some of these guys. And yet we've tried to engineer in our helmet, for example, things that make it attractive, make it worth making the change.
Yeah.
So our helmet has a really nice center of gravity. It doesn't feel as heavy on the head. We also have the widest field of view of any helmet on the market. So there's some elements in the helmet that can accentuate an athlete's performance, particularly a receiver's.
Yeah, exactly. You're what you see out of the side of your eye, whether it's an incoming defender or the football, really matters if your vision is too myopic here. Dave Marver, CEO of Isis Helmets. Now, explain to us a little bit what goes into the testing of these helmets, because we all know why this came to a head for Antonio Brown and also for others like Tom Brady. Is they tested these helmets. Some of them didn't pass muster. Obviously, yours did. I think it was the number one rated helmet. What is that testing? What are they testing for?
So the NFL and the Players Association, they got together a few years ago, and they jointly appointed academics, biomechanics experts, who came up with a test protocol and then evaluated all the helmets used in the NFL against that protocol. So what they do essentially is they put a helmet on a crash test dummy head that's instrumented, and they impact that helmet in a variety of locations at the velocities that are seen in NFL play. And in doing that, they're able to compare all of the helmets in a really consistent and fair way. And some of the helmets have done well, such as ours. Ours has been number one 3 consecutive years.
Yep.
And some of them perform so poorly that the NFL and the PA jointly decided, you know what, these should not be used on field anymore.
Yeah, and ultimately, you got to protect the player from himself. I want a lighter helmet. I want to be able to whatever. You got to protect him from himself. So the NFL did the right thing with Antonio Brown here and all these other guys who wanted to wear that old helmet. You agree?
I do, and I think by virtue of the NFL and the PA moving players into the better performing helmets, you're seeing a better result on field. So the concussions were down by about a quarter in the NFL last year. And interestingly, at the high school level, the researcher checked with all the high schools who switched into our helmet last year, their full rosters, and their concussions were down by a third. So, we're not going to make any claims about concussions, but the indications are that some of these moves into better performing helmets are making a difference for the athletes.
Yeah, no, I believe that. Dave Marver, CEO of Isis Helmets. Now, you mentioned high school. Let's move away from the National Football League, because I think this is where it becomes really interesting from a viability of the sport. So many parents, they hear about concussions, they get scared about it. I'm positive that you have friends that have kids that are playing football. And they ask you this question directly. Is the game self safe, and does wearing a better helmet make it safer? So it gives them a peace of mind, so to speak, for their young son, or even daughter in some cases, to go play the game.
Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because everyone focuses on the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's such a high-profile sport and part of our society. But we got into this to help kids. And so we've been really gratified to extend the availability of this helmet down to the high school level. But then also this year we introduced a youth helmet and a cap for 7-on-7 and flag football, both of which are the best testing technologies in the history of Virginia Tech helmet testing. And so I do think now is the best time, the safest time for kids to enjoy football, both because of new technology, but also because of greater awareness and increased vigilance and just better ways of practicing, getting rid of the Oklahoma drill and bull in the ring and those sorts of things.
Yeah, no, that was never fun. Even when I wanted to be tough as a kid, doing Oklahoma drill was not fun. Let me ask you real quickly, because you mentioned 7-on-7. My son is up in Greenwich High School, and they have a good football program, but they spend a lot of their offseason playing 7-on-7. Obviously, you don't want too much contact. What's the product for 7-on-7? I don't know if I've seen this one.
Yeah, that's called the Ultim Cap, and it's a soft technology. It uses some of what we have in the 0-1 helmet that you see at the NFL, but it's softer. And games like 7-on-7, you have to be concerned about incidental contact.
Yes.
These players are going at great speed. They're phenomenal athletes, and they're just going to bump heads once in a while, or bump head to elbow or head to ground. And so sports like that need protection, and we designed something specifically for 7-on-7 football. And we'll be doing the same for other sports like soccer. You wouldn't think of traditionally as having head health hazards, but have high rates of head injury.
Yeah, no, you definitely. I remember reading some of these studies that particularly girls at the high school level, because their necks aren't as strong as the boys, so their heads tend to move a lot more, so they need more protection. It's really interesting. You don't think about it. You think about it as a football thing, an NFL thing, but it trickles down to so many pieces of our recreational life, even if it's like skiing.
Absolutely right. Yeah, and in sports like skiing or cycling, where no one wore protective headgear 10, 15 years ago, now everyone does. I think you'll start to see protective headgear worn in sports like soccer increasingly going forward.
That's interesting. You guys have an enormous total accessible market here, Dave. I appreciate you hopping on.
You sound like a good investor.
I know a little bit. Dave, yeah. I appreciate you hopping on and talking with us for a few minutes. Good luck with Vices. I know you guys have been crushing it as far as testing, and in the NFL, all the guys that have switched willingly or unwillingly have loved the product. So continued success to you guys.
Oh, thanks so much.
Be good. Dave Marver, CEO of Vices Helmet. And I remember when they started doing these things and these new ideas for helmets, and the design is odd, right? Because I remember being used to like a streamlined look, and it's like, man, I look great. I look good out here. So if I look good, I'm gonna play good type of thing. But at some point you realize it doesn't matter if your head looks a little bit bigger, as long as I'm a little bit more protected. And brutal sport like football, it is well worth it. Antonio Brown is reporting to camp. We'll see if it's more about his feet than it is his head. All right, the numbers are in, and the pass interference reviews show virtually no change at all. Is the rule even worth it? The blast is next. But first, here's a CBS Sports Radio update from Jay Berman. It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Corey in Sacramento. He queries, is this helmet foot thing the beginning and end of Antonio Brown's drama in Oakland, or is it just the beginning of a lot more to come? Man, Corey, I know you're a Raiders fan. I wish I could say that this is the beginning and the end, but I think it might just be the beginning. Hopefully everything else after this is minor. Appreciate your question, Corey. Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros or tweeting it at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. Last segment here of Tiki and Tierney. I'm Tiki Barber, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Network. You can stream us on radio.com. All of our podcasts are there. All of our interviews are there as well. College football season is right around the corner. And tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, join CBS Sports Network's team of experts as they tackle the hottest topics on the gridiron. It's Inside College Football on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. That would be CBS Sports Network. Check those guys out. They're fantastic. And on Wednesday and Thursday, Aaron Murray, former Georgia quarterback, will be sitting in, co-hosting with me for 2 days as we round out the last week of me solo here on Tiki and Tierney. So look forward to having Aaron Murray on. And Tony Romo is going to be joining us one of those 2 days. So keep an ear out for our scheduling updates. Samter, are you ready for the blast?
Always and forever.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
I was waiting for each moment with you. Always and forever.
See, I was going to sing it, and then I realized I can't, and then you pull that out. What am I supposed to do now?
Listen and enjoy.
Man. Yeah, you just make me look bad in every possible way. Speaking of looking bad or good, depending how you look at it. Well, thank you. Thank you. If I started singing, you would stop loving me.
Yeah, I would. Sure. I'd leave the studio.
Loving you. Never mind. Just 2 of the 17 pass interference reviews were overturned so far in the preseason. We discussed this a little bit before, especially with Coach Payton.
Yeah.
So is this a good or a bad sign for the NFL and the new rule?
I don't think it's either right now, Samter. I think what these coaches are doing are just testing it. Like, what's it feel like? What's the mechanism going to be like? What's the process going to feel like? How are the referees going to approach it, and what are the decisions going to come down as? And so it's a testing ground in a lot of ways. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL told some of the coaches, you know what, if you have a little bit of an inkling, it's the preseason, these games don't really matter, throw it, see what happens, so that we can get a little bit of a ground test of how this is going to go from an officiating and NFL standpoint. I think it's good that coaches are getting a feel of it. So I can't really pass judgment on it yet, because I think, as Sean Payton said when we talked to him 2 hours ago, I think NFL coaches in the regular season are going to be a lot more judicious on how they pull this thing out.
So the Spurs obviously may be feeling a little bit burned that they got rid of Kawhi and brought in DeRozan. Are talking about possibly giving DeMar DeRozan a max extension before the season. Now, DeMar had a nice year, averaged 21 points. The Spurs snuck into the playoffs, but they kind of meddled around middle of the pack. So do you think that's a mistake to give DeRozan a big deal?
No, I don't, because I think that right now the San Antonio Spurs are in a transition phase from those star years where they were consistently viable in the Western Conference to potentially facing some lean ones ahead. If DeMar DeRozan were to bounce after this year, then and LaMarcus Aldridge ages out, they're really, really old. So they need a middle, I don't say middle-aged because that's wrong because he's not middle-aged, but you know what I mean, like middle of the age wage in the NBA player who can create on his own, who's a very good player. He's not like a superstar, but he is a very, very good player, DeMar DeRozan. I think that's the right way to go. Money is funny in the NBA, so it doesn't matter that you're giving him a max deal. So I'm going to say yes, this is the right move for the San Antonio Spurs, because it keeps them in the conversation and keeps them viable as they start to age out of some of those older stars.
Listen, maybe new assistant coach Tim Duncan will come off the bench for a couple of games. That'd be awesome.
Coach.
Right? So the MLB released their 2020 schedule, and little caveat.
Yeah.
The opener is going to be March 26th.
Wow.
Which is the earliest non-international opener in MLB history. Is that too early, or do you kind of like that they're spreading the season out a little bit more and trying to give guys a little bit more rest in between?
Let me say this. Why in the hell is MLB releasing their schedule today? Like, what's happening today that they need to release their schedule? We haven't even gotten to the postseason yet. We don't know who's making the wild card. There's so many other stories in Major League Baseball. Like the Mets on this ridiculous run, even though they did finally lose after 8 wins in a row, including taking a couple from the Nationals. A lot of people, they beat Strasburg, they beat Corbin. The Nationals are an interesting story, right? So there's so much going on in baseball right now. Why release your schedule unless you want it to be forgotten, which doesn't make sense? But to answer your specific question about the March 26th opener, is it too early? No, because early in the season, you're not paying a ton of time, paying a ton of attention. The only thing, the only reason I think this could be too early is because there are a lot of markets where it's freezing on March 26th, and you're going to have inclement weather and attendance, which you're trying to fight, attendance attrition, which you're trying to fight, is not going to be helped by starting a season when it's freezing outside. So I think it's okay, but certain markets, it's going to be terrible.
The U, baby.
The U.
Are they back? I don't know, D-Cell. We discussed this a little bit earlier on, starting redshirt freshman Jaren Williams in their first game against Florida over a highly anticipated transfer, Tate Martell, and Nikosi Perry, who, you know, showed moments last year, but wasn't really the guy. But Tate Martell, everyone thought he was the guy, and he's not even going to get a chance, at least not versus Florida. So do you think, even if Jaren Williams outperformed Martell and Perry during camp, do you think the Canes should start one of their veterans, especially against a team like Florida?
No, I think the Hurricanes, they had to do something like this that would shake people's attention. And I'm not talking about outside of the organization. I'm talking about inside the University of Miami's football team. And I know nothing about Tate Martell. He played very limited amount of snaps at Ohio State, even though the one game he did get a lot of snaps, I think he was like the player of the week or something in the Big Ten. So you knew he's good and he's athletic, but I think Miami has to look at, you know, how to win now. And so they can't afford it to be, well, you're a veteran and you have this expectation, so you got to play. It's got to be a meritocracy for them. They have to turn the nonsense quarterback play that's been derailing them for the last couple of years around. They have to play the best player because they've had one of the top defenses in college football for the last couple of years, and they have nothing to show for it because of this guy is supposed to play. And when you do that at a major program, people start to talk, and you end up never being able to get that guy. So you have to start the guy who's best. So I'm going to say this is exactly what they had to do.
I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, but Simone Biles, who dominated the 2016 Olympic Games, won virtually every medal you could possibly win, along with leading Team USA to their first gold in years. She was incredible this weekend. First on the balance beam, she did the first ever double-double, which was absolutely nuts. That means two flips and two twists in the air when jumping off of a balance beam, which is what, like 3 inches in diameter or in width? And then on the floor exercise, she performed the first ever triple-double, where she did two flips and three spins. And it's one of the most incredible things. We've never seen anybody like Simone Biles ever before.
Yeah.
As good as Komenichi was, as good as Kerry Strug and all those other, you know, Motsianu and everything that they were. Simone Biles just blows them all out of the water. So the question really is, if she dominates the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo like she did in 2016, and she has been at the U.S. Games and the World Championships, do you think Simone Biles could go down as the greatest female American Olympian ever?
Maybe. I'm looking at the lists. Dara Torres was amazing. She has 4 golds, 4 silvers, 4 bronze. She's been really good. Jenny Thompson is even better with 8 golds, 3 silvers, and a bronze. I'm going to say yeah, only because Simone Biles, her story is amazing, obviously, and we heard that at the last Olympics. But it's also, she's not done. And when you're innovating on in a sport in a way that has never been done before, not even by men, by the way. I mean, Samter mentioned some of those things that she was doing. Some of the men don't even try some of these routines that she puts out there. So I think her accomplishment is one thing. Individually, that will set her above all of the others that came before her. But the innovation that she's bringing to the sport, which then inspires future innovation, is something that's profound. And in my mind, makes her the best Olympian if she goes to 2020 in Japan and dominates like she just recently did in Brazil. I'm going to say yes, you'd be the best female Olympian ever.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
So yes, we were talking a little bit about the MLB releasing their 2020 schedule. Well, the NBA, a little bit more apropos because the season starts in a couple months.
Yep.
They released their full schedule. And not that we're going to go through every game. We already talked about the Christmas games a few weeks ago when they released that.
Yep.
But now we're starting to see like some of the big returns. Kawhi returning to Toronto December 11th. Kemba going back to Charlotte November 7th. Anthony Davis going back to New Orleans November 27th.
That one's going to be great.
Russell Westbrook going back to OKC on January 9th. So what return to former city are you most look forward to seeing?
When do the Nets go to Boston?
You know, I think there might be a typo in this email, in this article, because it says Nets guard Kyrie Irving is in Boston, and it doesn't actually finish the date. I think it's November 27th.
Yeah.
But I think that they've kind of missed their typing. But I think November 27th is Kyrie and the Nets back in Boston.
I would say that one. Boston's weird. I can't figure out where Boston's going to be. And the Nets aren't going to be ready yet. If it was next year, that would be the one that I would highlight. But this one, I'm going to say Anthony Davis going back to New Orleans. Only because not only is it the Los Angeles Lakers going across the country to New Orleans with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, it's that scenario with this like polar opposite age, you know, expectation, you know, experience, like everything that LeBron and the superstar Lakers and Anthony Davis have, it's the antithesis of what the Pelicans have. But interestingly, long term, the excitement's probably stronger on the New Orleans side because of Zion and all those young, talented kids that they have that they've acquired in the trade. And the storylines are like they interweave the whole thing because of David Griffin and his history with the Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron was there and helping him win a championship. That's easily the one that I'll look at. What was the date on that one? December?
That's November 27th.
November 27th.
So here's the question. Does Anthony Davis booed or cheered?
No, he's booed.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it.
Russell Westbrook in OKC.
Russell Westbrook will be cheered in OKC.
Paul George in OKC.
Paul George will there will be a benign reaction.
Okay.
It won't be one or the other.
Now this one could be interesting. Now maybe the PR battle has gone his way because of how little he was actually offered by the Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
But Kemba Walker in his return. I mean that he kept saying, I want to be here, my family's here.
I don't know enough about like the emotional fandom. It was funny, we had that conversation with Jim Brewer when he was in here last week talking about the fandom of the Mets. And he was hilarious. I mean, I don't think I've laughed out loud like that in a long time. Jim Brewer was awesome. Again, you can find it on our podcast on radio.com. Just look up Tiki and Tierney. You'll see the Jim Brewer conversation. But he talked about fandom. And Mets fandom is intense, and it's real, and it's awesome. I don't know what the Charlotte Hornets fandom is like, and if there is a deep emotional attachment. My guess is that Kemba will be cheered for what he did in the years that he was in Carolina. And they won't hold it against him that he's now a Boston Celtic, because he was great for them. Great day today. Tomorrow I'm off. BT will be hosting solo from Salt Lake City, Utah. Aaron Murray will be sitting in with me Wednesday and Thursday. Tony Romo coming as well. See you guys soon. Be well.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.